Welcome to Breakthrough Barriers with Damali. I'm your host, Damali Peterman. On this podcast, we invite you to share a conflict that you need help navigating, and I, along with a guest co-host, will share what we would do in that situation to help you reach your breakthrough. Welcome to the show. On today's episode, I am so excited to welcome Elliot Lee to the studio. Elliot, welcome.
Thank you, Damali. Thank you for having me.
Oh, wow. It's totally my pleasure. I want you all to know how I know Elliot. Elliot is one of the rock stars who serves on the board of the New York Peace Institute, which is an amazing nonprofit that's focused on establishing so many things from restorative justice to mediation to just making New York a better and more peaceful place. And I met Elliot because he's just been one of the superstars on the board for how many years now, Elliot?
Oh, gosh. I think it's been 3 years now, over 3 years.
Wow. And Elliot, he's currently the treasurer, so he's an officer on the board. But more than that, he is one of the reasons why we have a fantastic event every year, which we call a Peace Raiser, which is our kind of spin on a fundraiser. And so he's just an amazing person to know and just one of the most kindest people I've ever met in my life.
Thank you, Damali. I think when I think about New York Peace Institute, we always strive to achieve your example because you're the real rock star.
Oh, Elliot, I'll pay you later for that.
And it's definitely been an awesome journey and like you said, a great organization that I'm proud to be part of right now.
Oh yeah, it's just been fantastic. And so given that we've been on this board together for many years, we've had many opportunities to communicate, to chat, to have dinner, and it's just a pleasure to now share the podcast studio in this cool format.
Definitely. I'm really happy to be here and glad that I'm one of the few that you're speaking to right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the world needs to know you, Elliot, clearly. And so why don't you tell us more about yourself?
Sure. So I am in the accounting and financial arena. I'm a partner at Eisner Amper. And for those that don't know what Eisner Amper is, we are an accounting and consulting firm. My background is more dispute resolution, which kind of drew me towards the New York Peace Institute path and their mission, and kind of how we got to know each other.
Yeah.
I probably spend more time than I want working, unfortunately. But outside of work, I do try to run as much as I can. I've done a number of marathons, a couple ultras. I've lived in New York for a really, really long time now, over 20 years. And, you know, I think I can finally call it home now.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so, I mean, I've heard some wonderful things from various folks about, you know, things that make you a New Yorker. Definitely running marathons and ultras in New York make you a New Yorker, and definitely living here for a couple decades.
I think once you hit that 20-year mark, they say you're never going to leave.
You won't.
Yeah, I think to be determined. I love it here, but there's a... It's a love-hate relationship, right?
I hear you. I know that New York is one of those places that so many people love to call home, but it's really people like you being here, Elliot, that make it home for me.
Oh, well, I really appreciate that. And I think the rap that we get in terms of how people perceive New York is just, it's uneducated. And I think as people visit New York more and more, they find that people are really approachable, friendly.
Yes.
We all run into our conflicts because we're so densely packed.
So true.
But I think in general as a city, there's a lot of love here.
Definitely. So much love. And I love that you have this dispute resolution background, which, as you know, really aligns with my background.
Yeah, definitely.
And one of the great things is that we have you in the studio today to hopefully help, you know, provide some insight to folks who want to have more options with respect to resolving situations that they're facing.
I think it's so awesome. I think this is such a great mechanism for people to go to and use as a reference point to get some advice. And try to work through their conflicts. So.
Absolutely. And we got to get you back in the studio, Elliot. You're just saying all the right things, let me tell you. So for those of you who are tuning in for the first time, I'd like to give you some insight to the format of the show. So basically, we have a hotline where people can call in and ask any question that they have. And it doesn't have to be a conflict necessarily. It could be just a situation that they're contemplating and they would really love to have some outside intel or just to have another person's experience or learn and or someone to learn from, basically. Right. And so we're kind of helping them as they navigate through these things. And we're saying what we would do if we were in that situation. Sure. And what's really fruitful about it is that, you know, we talk about like our pluses and minuses, some successes and failures. And hopefully with this collective wisdom, we're really providing a roadmap or just general insight to folks who really would appreciate a third party's opinion.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And how perceptive of you, because the more insight and the more discussion around difficult topics or hard decisions help create a better, clearer path and ultimately a better resolution or a solution.
Absolutely. And what we're hoping for is that you guys continue to call in. So what are you waiting for? Pick up the phone, call our hotline, ask us questions. We'll get Elliot Lee back in the studio again. But without further ado, we would love to play our first message for you.
Awesome. Let's hear it.
You have one message. Hey, Damali. This is Brian. I'm calling in to find out how is it that how will someone be able to go about starting a business in NYC? Obviously, the costs here aren't very cheap. Wanted to know if there are any free resources that someone can use in order to help them start up their own business, especially coming from a minority perspective. Thank you.
What I love about that message is it sounds like he said he's in New York City and you hear like police cars going by in the background. So if anyone was wondering, if people are actually calling in from off the street, it's happening. You just heard it.
It is real on the street, real time here.
Like, I need your help, Damali. Like, this is what's going on right now. Walking down the street, police cars are going by. And so I think what I heard him say, Elliot, is how do you go about starting a business in New York City? You know, it's not cheap. And he also wanted to know if there were any free resources that we knew about to help recommend to any, let's call them burgeoning entrepreneurs.
Sure. I think in terms of, let me address, I guess, the first piece of it, which is how do you start a business in New York City, particularly in a place where it is quite cost prohibitive when you look at rent and cost of labor and other things that potentially go into your factors or the consideration that you have to place into how you're going to start a business. What's interesting is I do know a lot of, I have a lot of friends who have started businesses in New York, and it's not impossible. I think, as with any business, the key is your idea and how you are taking that idea and presenting it and building it and getting excitement around it. So once you have that piece, obviously, then the logistics in relation to putting together a business plan, the forecasts, all that stuff that you need to eventually then go to the market or go to others to say, look, I have a great idea. It's viable. It has a projected cash flow. Mm-hmm. You know, why should you be interested? Because this is what I'm projecting it to do. And as a result, you'll get more interest and you'll build from there. Easier said than done, obviously. Honestly, from the perspective of free resources, I'm probably less educated about certain resources that are out there. I'm sure, and I've done this before in a very limited capacity, there are resources out there when you go and say, okay, I want to look up a business plan, mm-hmm. and what are the elements and what are the factors I need to consider. What's interesting is actually, this is coincidental, as I was listening to another podcast this morning, and I think the interview was with, I forget his name, but the gentleman that started Strava, which is it's like a community and an app that you do to track kind of endurance activities. Mm-hmm. And what that individual, what the person who founded that entity, and forgive me, I forget his name, said was, most people say, I can't start a business because I don't have an idea, mm-hmm. or I can't think of a really great idea that's unique. And it falls flat there. And what he said that resonated with me was, you have to take those ideas and discuss them. And absolutely. Even if they're not what you think they're eventually going to be, that process of talking and getting feedback and getting criticism will help refine that idea so it gets to the point where it does become viable and you get enough information and feedback that it is something that people want. And then from there, you know, the logistics of raising capital and everything else kind of fall into place.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right, Elliot, because I feel like more often than not, I hear people saying, oh, I have an idea, but I don't want to share it, or I'm afraid someone's going to take my idea if I share it. And I'm like, well, one, everyone can't carry out your idea.
Right.
They may not have the expertise, the resources. They may not be uniquely qualified to do it. Right. And so if you hold it so close to the vest, what you risk is, one, not getting it out there, not refining it, and two, not getting help.
Right.
Because it's hard to do most things on your own without any help whatsoever.
Yeah.
And what I've found, Elliot, is that every time that I've had an idea, just one, me talking about it and people seeing my passion about it gets them excited about it, right?
Absolutely.
And then two, people have always tried to help me. And so just randomly, I met someone in Guadeloupe. We were on the beach with their families. We were having a conversation, and we realized that we both lived in New York City.
Right.
So we planned to get together, and this was in December. So we planned to get together at some point when we came back to New York. Fast forward to, we get together, we have tea, and we're chatting, and she was like, what are you doing today? And I was like, well, today I was just working on something. I probably shouldn't say it. And she's like, no, tell me. And so I said, I'm working on a book, and I have this idea, and I'm so excited about it. And I start telling her about the idea. I didn't know that in a past life, she worked for one of the top five publishing companies in the country. And right there, as we were chatting, she sent me an email that had the names of like 8 agents for me to talk to.
Wow.
And so sharing your ideas is great because, one, if I might be talking to you today from, you know, your company, but maybe years ago you worked somewhere else.
Sure.
Maybe you have other contacts in your network that could help me. Or maybe you can say, you know what, I have some insight on that because of X, Y, and Z to help me refine the idea.
Absolutely.
And the more times you talk about it, the better, just call it a pitch, the better your pitch becomes,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And so I love that insight. I think that's a great way to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's something where, you know, ideas come from a place of passion.
Yes.
And, you know, if you look at a lot of these businesses that start up and then become multi-million dollar companies, usually the backstory is somebody had a passion for something. And that passion kind of drove a need to fill some kind of, you know, missing component in the market.
Yeah.
And they use that passion to build towards that solution. And I think, you know, even as I started this conversation, the first thing I thought of was, well, you know, how can I help this individual with advice about a business plan? And that might not be even the right place to start in relation to how you build your own business. It's that passion. It's that drive to say, okay, I love this and I want to do it. And then obviously lining that up to what does the market look at? What does the market need? And then how do I meet the demands or the needs of the market? And then all those details beyond that will come into place.
Absolutely. And I think what you're tapping into is something that I've found to be so key for people who have ideas and they're trying to assess whether or not they're opportunities.
Right.
And opportunities are what generates revenue.
Right.
Ideas are just great ideas that you have.
Absolutely.
But opportunities is something that translates to money coming back.
Agreed.
And so if you are if what you're thinking of is solving a problem, as Elliot said, or a need in the marketplace, then you have, it sounds like it could be an opportunity for you. And then with respect to testing out the viability, who are the competitors in the space?
Right.
What are they doing? What idea that you have that can show itself to be an opportunity that will help you and set you aside and show that you are like supposed to be in this space?
Right.
And so when I think about that, and I think about free resources, there are a few things that come to mind. With respect to business plans, like they've changed so much over the past few years, or say several decades. I think when I was in the master's program, they used to be like these very long documents, which they still are.
Right.
But I know that there are a few programs now that have this one-page document. At Columbia, they have a program that's sponsored by the Small Business Development Center, and it's called the Columbia Harlem SBDC.
Okay.
And what they offer, and I can tell you this from firsthand experience because I took the course, I think it's like an hour and a half long, and they offer a free course on like this very shortcut business plan method.
Okay.
And it allows you to keep changing and updating it as you refine your idea.
Right.
And it has you to identify, one, what the idea or opportunity is, what the need is that you're trying to address or the problem you're trying to solve. Who is your market?
Right.
They want you to describe your consumer. What do they look like? What are their spending habits? What do they do? So you can try to cater the product to them. Maybe it's not a business-to-consumer product or service. It may be a business-to-business product or service. But this format helps you to figure that out.
Yeah, I love that. And, and the fact that it's free and it's free. Accessible.
It's free. And they have three classes. They have that class, and then they have some kind of small business finance 101 and 102.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think, I mean, that reminds me of, as we speak about, you know, the management speak, the you know, the classic SWOT analysis. But again, I think...
You should explain what SWOT is.
So a SWOT analysis really takes kind of a... facts and puts it into this decision-making framework where you analyze the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Very helpful in relation to how you're assessing your place in the market. But again, I feel like as we go through this conversation, we've now gone through the different evolutions or components of how an idea builds itself up and how it goes from an idea ultimately to an execution, and ultimately justifying that there is a need in the market, which then will allow you to really get into the nitty-gritty of the financial analysis, which is probably more something that I'm familiar with, where you're doing projections in terms of what your revenues might look like, what your cost structure is, you know, doing a cash flow, discounting it back, all really important things. But ultimately, as we were saying before, without the passion, one can go through that exercise and be so exact and precise in relation to the model. But without the passion, without the drive in relation to going through and really building the business, mm-hmm. because from what I understand, and certainly a lot of my friends who are entrepreneurs, that you're going to run into roadblocks. You're going to hit things that are unexpected, and it's going to test your resolve in terms of building this business or getting this business off the ground. Those little things in terms of the financial metrics and how you build the model are super important, but I think take a back seat when you really get to the point in terms of what you love and whether you want this thing to go to market because it's truly your passion. That's kind of how I feel about most things that, you know, you really put an effort into in your life.
It's so true. And, you know, that's kind of how I ended up here, Elliot. I was working for a big company and I was enjoying the work that I did. But there was something that was missing, meaning there was something that I'd always wanted to do, which was to have my own company. And that passion for being a conflict resolver and helping people wasn't basically manifesting in the way that I had envisioned it.
Sure.
Because, you know, when you work for someone else, you don't always get to control what you do.
Absolutely.
Meaning like the workload, the workflow, who the clients are. Right. You kind of like someone gives you an assignment and you do it.
Right.
And so for me, one of the things that I did was I wrote down everything that I knew how to do. And then on that list, I circled what I love to do.
Okay.
And I noticed kind of a pattern arising that kind of fell into three categories.
Okay.
Providing legal services, mediating, and teaching people how to resolve their own conflicts. Awesome. And that's what I do every day.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, when you are passionate about what you do, when you do hit those roadblocks that you mentioned, which every entrepreneur faces, you have the resolve to continue because, one, you're doing what you love, and two, like, you see the bigger picture.
Right.
And some of the most amazing stories that I've heard, including like Tony Say's story about Zappos, was we think about Zappos and how successful it is,
right.
but he also had a business that had failed before. And he said it was a failure because he wasn't thinking, and he had a great interview, but he wasn't thinking a lot about the people aspect of it. He was thinking more about, I want everyone to have these qualifications,
okay.
but the customer service component wasn't there. So now with Zappos, it's one of the best companies as far as customer service because that's what they focus on first.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so I think that there is space to be passionate about what you want to do and to start a business. I wish we knew what he wanted to start, right? Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be awesome.
What if it's like the best like popcorn business ever?
You have to call back and tell us now.
He should send us some samples
Definitely.
Or something, right? We just made him a business for him. But what's cool about it is there's so many resources available in New York City. New York City has a small business development center, I think, in many of the boroughs. There's also the Small Business Association. And I think you said at the end, especially coming from a minority perspective, which means you're trying to figure out if there were some opportunities for minorities. And I will tell you that in New York City and New York State, they have the minority-owned and women business-owned entity certification, which you can get. There are some qualifications and criteria you have to meet, but it's something that's certainly available to individuals that meet the criteria.
Absolutely.
And what that does is that kind of levels the playing field, if you will, by providing opportunities that are intended specifically for those particular groups who have been sometimes underrepresented in some of the more traditional contractual spaces in New York City and New York State.
Absolutely. Yeah, the MWBE program, from what I understand in terms of New York as well as New Jersey, is very vibrant. It's taken very seriously. There are a lot of talented, well-qualified firms out there. And as you said, a lot of these contracts specifically have a component that's carved out for that.
That's right.
And there's a lot of resources that I know that's out there to help businesses get through that process, because it is somewhat onerous and rigorous in terms of the actual compliance and filling out the paperwork.
Yeah.
But there is definitely a very strong, much needed, place in the market for that.
Absolutely. And a few resources that come to mind, again, look for your local SBDC, Small Business Development Center. I know there are some in Long Island. There's some in, Columbia, Harlem, New Jersey. There is also resources for women. For example, the New York Women's Chamber of Commerce, they have a really great program where they help women to receive their certification. And for me, like, I actually did it through the SBDC, and I have my New York City and New York State certification for being a minority woman business owner. And there is, to Elliot's point, a lot of funds allocated on a lot of contracts, basically saying that it is certain utilization goals that the companies want to meet by saying that they are contracting with minorities and women. And that's really huge. Yeah. That can be the difference of, being a part of a big project where maybe you wouldn't have had that opportunity before.
Sure, absolutely. I think a lot of these contracts, these type of entities get to serve as a subconsultant to a prime.
Mm-hmm.
And all the better, because then they get more experience. And, the idea is, I think a lot of these entities then become the prime.
That's so right. That's right.
I think it's a great program, and certainly a lot of resources out there to support it.
Absolutely. So, Brian, I hope that was helpful. Basically, we are sending you good vibes. We hope that you have received enough information to start thinking about ways to start your business.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are looking forward to our popcorn samples.
Yeah, send us some popcorn samples. We would love that. By the way, we're at the most amazing podcast studio, Gotham Podcast Studio, just putting it out there. So I'm sure everyone would love some of that popcorn, since we've given you a popcorn business. What do you think? Let's listen to the next message.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You have one message. Hi, Damali. It's Galit. So the conflict that I am having is more of I need advice on how to broach a subject with a person who I love very much but gets very defensive when anything that could be misconstrued as critical comes up. Now, I have to work very closely with this person on one of the nonprofits that I'm on the board of, and basically, it seems that the nonprofit is kind of tied to being everything for the nonprofit is kind of tied to their worth, and so they kind of cut out everyone else from the story, where the nonprofit is not just them, and it's the combined efforts of many people, and it has ostracized many people in the past, and it feels almost like anyone that confronts them gets, kind of pushed out, as it were. And nothing that you can say, even if it's said in, I feel like even if we've tried to say it in a nice way, it still comes off as you're not, it gets turned into you're not being supportive of me. And I want to know how to broach the subject of, getting clear on the the story of how the nonprofit came about, because it wasn't just the efforts of one person. It took multiple people to put it together, and it was all, you know, everyone should be acknowledged for their work and how much effort they've put into it, and also how to make it a more peaceful environment where it's not just one person doing everything or one person saying they do everything, and the rest not, you know, it's gotten to a point where sometimes we don't even want to, you know, open emails because we're scared of what we're about to read. And recently we had, you know, an article done, a few articles and a few press engagements done where the rest of the board was just left out of it, and that's not okay, in my opinion, for it. So I hope you can help with that. And
wow, so that was a multi-part question.
There's
a lot to unpack. I was trying to kind of group this into some categories.
Okay.
I don't know if it's helpful, but I'll take a stab at
absolutely.
It. And so first, it sounds like the first question is how to communicate with someone who is deeply entrenched in an organization that they both belong to. The second part is how to work on a origination story that can be told by multiple people where everyone shines, as opposed to highlighting one person and one person's efforts. Yeah. And then I think the third question is how to create a police. I think the third one is how to create a peaceful environment where everyone is kind of collaborating and working together, and the collective efforts of everyone is being highlighted.
I think that was very concise and very well said.
Thank you, Elliot.
Do you want to do each piece?
Yeah, let's do that.
So I think the first piece, in terms of having conversations or difficult conversations,
mm-hmm.
Obviously a very hard thing to approach and something that we all deal with in almost every aspect of our life. When I have conversations, what I try to do is I always try to think about what is motivating the other side and where they might be coming from. You don't necessarily have to agree with what the other side might be saying, but you do have, I think, a responsibility and obligation to at least understand. And the more you understand, the better that you can actually communicate with that person, right? So communication is less about what you say, more about what you hear.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know this better than I have. You're a trained mediator. You've been through this. But oftentimes, I think if you can at least understand what the other side feels, and it sounds like there are a lot of emotions in this, you might be able to better understand where they're coming from and then how you address and respond to that. Obviously, much easier said than done, but the first step to that whole process is really being open to hear what they might have to say and how they feel.
It's so true, because part of the situation may be that they feel unheard.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And so sometimes you can work towards a resolution, or to your point, Elliot, which is very poignant and I completely agree with, reaching an understanding or understanding where they're coming from by showing them that you hear what they're saying.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I like that you said that, you know, when you're talking to someone, the communication is really about, you know, not what you're saying, but also what you're hearing, and also this concept of active listening.
Yeah.
And so when you know, especially if there's a history that's been established,
right,
it's really a hurdle that is hard to overcome if you're walking into a conversation with some baggage, right?
Absolutely.
Just like think about that physically, like you're like holding all these bags and you're like trying to do something else. It's like, oh, I'm trying to do this, but I can't. And so I think that of course, you've given us a lot of information about the dynamics, but without knowing more, I'll make some assumptions
right,
for the purpose of this podcast. And if it's a person, as you said, who is being defensive, one thing that I have found to work for me in situations where I have to have a difficult conversation, or if I'm being a mediator in a conversation and I see that there's impasse and people aren't hearing each other, is I try to find something that is common ground or that the parties have in common or that I have in common with the other person. And that does take some skill.
Yeah.
Because when you have a situation, like you have tunnel vision, yeah. you're not sometimes able to see and process what's happening for the other person because you're feeling what's happening to you.
Right.
And so if this person is being defensive, usually, you know, if you go back to the beginning of time when people have a situation where they were becoming defensive, that's because kind of their fight, flight, or freeze like mechanisms, like that survival has been triggered.
Yeah.
And so you kind of are defensive when you think you are being attacked.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree.
And so sometimes we have to ask ourselves, you know, have we done something to, is there a reason why this person feels this way?
Yeah.
Is there, and that's very hard to do.
It's very hard to do, but I think if you are able to accomplish that, particularly in this discussion, to really understand what the other person is feeling or why they might be in a position where they are defensive, not to say that you're going to be able to, you know, resolve it, but at least you'll understand and you'll be able to at least further the conversation.
That's right.
'Cause, you know, that, as Damali, what you said just now is very impactful in that it came from somewhere. It didn't just sprout out from, you know, thin air. There's some emotion or some baggage, as you said, that's coming along with this conversation that you may not understand. And it may be very relevant in terms of opening up those lines of conversation.
It's so true. I had a mediation once with two coworkers, and we were talking about something that had happened a month ago. But once we started unpacking it for one of the parties, it started 2 years ago from something that had happened that had never been addressed. And for 2 years, everything that happened after that in her mind was a continuation of that 2-year-old offense.
Right.
Yeah. And that came out during our mediation session. And that was it was a turning point in the conversation because it allowed the other person to say, oh, well, you know, I didn't see it that way. What was happening was this. And what you didn't know was that this was happening in my life at that time. And so it wasn't personal to you. I was just in this space. And once we were able to address that, it kind of felt like that just, I don't know, allowed for this conversation that did start from a difficult place to really help the parties reach an understanding because they were able to revisit that initial trigger for the one person.
Right.
You know?
And it's amazing what time will do in a situation like that because as two parties don't really understand each other, what happens is resentment continues to build and build and build. And eventually what happens is people don't want to confront that. People don't want to deal with it. Just like in this example, I think I heard that, you know, you're afraid to open your emails because you don't know what's going to be there.
Yeah.
And your natural inclination is going to be, I just want to avoid this situation.
That's right.
But you really do need to try to go towards it and learn as much as you can. And then from there, I think you'll be in a better position to try to address and respond to it.
Absolutely. It sounds like you said that you're part of a nonprofit board. And so Ellie and I are part of a nonprofit board, so we can understand that aspect of it. I think part of what came up in your questions is, you know, what is our origination story? And that's something that I think of everything that you ask is there's an easy way to address that. And to me, that's coming together as a group and figuring out what the story is.
Right. And I think that's, you know, with a not-for-profit, even harder, I think, because different from your day job, which in a lot of instances or circumstances, you have to go and you have to go to work and you have to show up to get paid. Typically, if you're on a board of a not-for-profit, you're there because you really believe in the cause and you have passion and you have emotion that's tied to it. And I can certainly see in this situation, as you described, many people are going to feel like that they're part of the organization and they want their story to be heard or their aspect of what they contributed. And I think it becomes a harder and harder conversation then in terms of piecing together, well, everybody's contribution is so meaningful, right? It's not one is better than the other or one does more than the other. But everybody needs to come together. And Damali, I think that's, I love that suggestion where it's more collaborative. At the end of the day, you do need everybody on a board to function together and work together to get the most optimal, effective results.
So true.
And the more that you can have those conversations to build that story together, obviously it's going to be a much better result.
That's right. And then getting everyone on the same page. is so key because, you know, say if you have a website and you want to have that story kind of about us, right. It should be something that everyone is saying.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And so for that one, I think, you know, maybe there's a because that is also a way that you don't have to call out this person.
Right.
You can say, hey, why don't we, you know, get together and figure out how to craft our mission statement or to further refine our mission statement or our vision statement or to think about like the about us section. Does it really reflect who we are today?
Right.
Have we grown? And so it can kind of be a way to revisit the organizational structure and maybe engage in some strategic planning.
Yeah.
And so there's so many ways you can look at that. And so for that one, hopefully that's one option on how to deal with that. And then I think the last question that you had was more on how to create a peaceful environment. And I think that's when you also mentioned, as Elliot pointed out, that there's so much, let's call it trauma, that sometimes receiving an email from someone can kind of trigger an emotional response.
Right.
And so what do you think about that, Elliot?
The key component in my mind for that is respect across the entire organization. And this is going to be respect from you as well as from the other side, from the person that you're having this conflict with. And obviously that's very difficult because they may not be seeing it the way that you are. They may be at this point somebody that creates more of the conflict. But again, I go back to what we were saying before. If you can demonstrate some understanding, that person hopefully will see that you have a professional and mutual respect to them, and then they'll open up and be able to treat you and speak to you in the same way. You know, always take the high road is kind of the philosophy I live by. You know, typically works. But I think if you stick to that, you're going to get a better response. And more often than not, people will treat you the way that you treat them.
It's so true. It's the golden rule. When I was a child, my parents had a little sort of plaque or painting on the wall that said, treat others the way that you want to be treated, the golden rule. And that's something that has really stuck with me from childhood to being an adult is if I treat people the way I want to be treated and I live by that, and to your very great point about respectful communications, then usually that's a good starting point to have a conversation. I think that sometimes environments have to change.
Sure.
And, you know, if you're looking at a situation where there's some toxicity in your environment, the first thing I always want to know is, can you pinpoint the source of it?
Right.
And what can be done to fix it? Meaning, is it something that just requires a conversation? Do you need some training? Do you need some external resources? Is this something that can be fixed? Do you want it to be fixed?
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, it's kind of breaking it down and analyzing it a little bit to figure out what will work. But what it sounds like to me is if you're asking the questions, then you want it to work.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. You're looking for the solution.
Yeah.
I think that with this, as I think about this more and we're discussing it, there's clearly some aspect that's coming from this other individual in relation to how much they feel they put into it, which I think it's a really important point that you want to focus on, because obviously they have contributed in a way to further the organization, and it sounds like they don't feel that they're getting the respect or the credit or at least some kind of acknowledgement in relation to what they put forward. And sometimes it's as easy as just saying, yeah, we totally appreciate what you've done. You're critical to this. We're all critical to this, and your voice needs to be heard, and we all need to be together in relation to how we build this out and make our organization that we're all part of better and grow, and everything will eventually get to the point where the entire board and entire organization is on the same page. Obviously, it's really difficult to just it's one thing to say it, and as you go through this process and have these conversations, it can be challenging. But I think at the end of the day, the more that you have the mutual respect in terms of understanding where they're coming from, what their position is, it might help you at least navigate that conversation better.
Absolutely, Elliot. And I think that brings us full circle to kind of the first thing that we were talking about, which is the person feeling heard,
right?
Because if you acknowledge what a person is saying, you don't have to agree with them.
Right.
But if you acknowledge, I hear you saying that you don't feel that you've gotten the recognition and credit that you deserve for your contributions to the organization, that might be enough to help them to hear that you understand what, you know, is going on for them.
Absolutely.
Because part of it is sometimes we're just, again, in our own worlds, we have our own silos. And if you're in a conflict, it may be difficult to see and appreciate the other person's point of view.
Absolutely.
And so if you can do that, I think that would be key. Also, as Elliot pointed out, respect. Respect is so key. And what's interesting about respect, that as I've seen it come up in various mediations, is respect doesn't always have a uniform definition. And so one of the things that I like to do is ask, what does respect mean to you? What does it look like to you?
Yeah.
Because maybe the roadmap for that person is different than yours.
Absolutely.
And maybe, you know, there's something that you're doing unintentionally or subconsciously or unconsciously where you're just like, oh, I had no idea that that was, you know, affecting you in that
right.
way.
That I was projecting that.
Right? Yeah.
Right. Completely unintended.
It's completely unintended. Yeah. And sometimes people, you know, I love that you said, take the high road. I think Michelle Obama said, when they go low, we go high.
Yeah.
And I think what I love about that is, you know, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt. I always want to assume good intentions.
Yes.
And so, you know, along with that comes a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And so I don't know if that's helpful, but it sounds like at least at a minimum, we've given you some ideas as to how you can address having a conversation with the person who could be defensive, how to craft an origination story that everyone can collectively collaborate and divide in creating and building, how to craft an origination story that everyone can be kind of collaborative in the process of creating. And then three, how to really work on a peaceful environment, kind of taking stock and seeing if it's salvageable, and if it is, what everyone can do to create that harmonious space you're looking for.
Yeah, I love it. And we definitely want to thank you for your contribution, because being part of a not-for-profit is, being on the board is a volunteer activity. And the fact that you're calling and you have this level of interest to make it successful, you know, we definitely commend you, and speaks volumes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so please let us know how things are going.
Yeah.
We'll get Elliot back in here. We'll do some more tag teaming of of sharing our insight. I really want to thank the audience for tuning in. It's always great to have our listeners out there listening and hopefully taking part in the community by calling in and providing more content, but also kind of sharing some of this collective wisdom to others who may be experiencing similar situations.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Molly, for having me.
Oh, Elliot, it's been my pleasure and all of our pleasure to have you here on the show. You are phenomenal. Thank you for joining me today in the studio.
Thank you.
So I'm your host, Damali Peterman, and this is Breakthrough Barriers with Damali. Continue to break through and have a wonderful day. Do you have any barriers that we can help you break through? If so, you can leave a brief message at 646-363-6322 or on our interactive blog at www.breakthroughadr.com. Please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at the @BREAKTHROUGH AD R. I'm your host, Damali Peterman, and this is Breakthrough Barriers with Damali. Although I am a lawyer, mediator, and an educator, and many of my co-hosts will represent various professions, we want to be clear that we are not providing legal advice, counseling, or suggestions. Our goal is to provide a roadmap for conflict resolution to generate future conflict resolvers. Continue to break through and have a wonderful day.